Just last week, California's Governor Jerry Brown ordered mandatory cutbacks in urban water use of 25%. While this may sound like a lot, does this really target the problem of water shortage? What about water use for farming, for instance?
Right. So farmers use about 80% of what's called developed water in California. Undeveloped water is the water that goes in the environment. And cities are, and you know, sort of municipal and industrial operations use about 20% of the water in California. So even assuming that 25% reductions occur, you're talking about 25% of 20%, which is only 5% of the total water. So he's basically missed the agricultural water use, and that was not an accident because they're very powerful politically.
Yeah, but it doesn't really do much. Like you said, that's just a really small percentage. Wouldn't you have to include farming?
Yes, but it seems to be more important to help allow farmers to make money using the water instead of reserving the water for future use. So literally, you're talking about sacrificing urban water security for agricultural production.
The drought in California is now in its fourth year and has seen lakes and reservoirs sink to historic lows. What has been done to tackle water shortage in these past years? I mean, it's 4 years we're talking.
Yes, in the first couple of years, there was enough water, so nobody did anything. And by the way, this is at least the third drought, if not the fourth drought in my lifetime. So this is not exactly a new idea. Last year, I was actively involved in trying to get managers to do something about their storage problems, for example, and they said, we have enough storage for this year. So there's not very much planning, and these are major managers, the city of Los Angeles managers. They're not small town. So they basically wait until there's a crisis, and then they wait for the governor to say, do something, and then they're going to tell people to stop using water. So it's a very reactive kind of policy, is not even the right word, environment. They just say, oh gosh, run around, do something. And then, you know, maybe something will happen or maybe it'll be too late. And when it's too late, that means that more or less the environment will end up getting sacrificed, or the future will be sacrificed in terms of, for example, using groundwater that we would want to have around next year.
And drought emergencies were also declared in parts of Oregon and Washington. And Taiwan has launched water rationing schemes in some major cities. And Brazil's Sao Paulo is battling the worst drought in more than 80 years. Will these water shortages give way to conflict over water? Will conflict over water emerge?
I don't think conflict will emerge in the long run. Of course, there's going to be a lot of angry people. In Sao Paulo, the richer neighborhoods are still getting more water than the poorer neighborhoods. So there's obviously problems with this, but in the end, this increasing demand and falling supply, which is causing more shortages around the world, is something that has to be dealt with in terms of what we call water governance, or more or less making decisions on priorities because there's not abundant water. So when I wrote my book called The End of Abundance, it was basically to say to people, there's not abundant water anymore in many parts of the world, as you just mentioned. So we need to change the way we manage water. And that tends to be a political process, but it can use a lot of economic tools.
And how should we manage water? What should be the priorities?
The way that I write it, I say, as a priority, you have to decide as a society how much water you want to set aside for your environment. Now, a poorer country tends to put less value on the environment than a richer country. So there's a decision that a society will make. It's a political process. After that process, you need to decide how to allocate water between, for example, cities and agriculture. And because farmers grow food for a profit and water is an input for their profits, then it's important for farmers to have market prices for water, like they already do in Chile and Australia. In cities, which are run through a whole different system because they have to pay for their water distribution systems and wastewater treatment and so on, then you need to say, okay, how much water are we going to get? And then how are we going to manage that among our citizens? So it turns out it's in some ways very complicated if you try and do everything at once, but it's not so hard if you break it into smaller pieces.
But so where would you start? Would you start with emergency measures?
Well, in the case of Sao Paulo and California, they're in different circumstances because Sao Paulo doesn't really have very much water in storage at all, but California does have quite a bit in storage now. So in California, I have suggested, for example, that no water be allowed to be used outside on lawns. And I've also suggested that farmers be stopped from using groundwater and that a lot of the water that's in reservoirs be redirected towards cities and away from agriculture. But those are just my suggestions in terms of priorities. In the long run, you need to have better market water pricing so that people use less water. Higher prices can also generate enough revenue to subsidize poor people. This is a very easy thing to do. And you need to have water markets for farmers because right now, farmers don't exchange water with each other. And so you have extremely inefficient water use because for farmers, the water is free. So there's no point of trying to conserve it.
And so basically you said you would have banned water usage outside. So under your scheme, people weren't allowed to water their lawns.
That's right. I mean, I would prefer to have water pricing so people will find the best way to use less water. But in California's emergency status, you basically don't have time for that kind of pricing mechanism to work. People need to do something right now.